Please stand or take whichever posture works best for you for the reading of God's word. When the advocate comes, whom I will send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth who comes from the Father, the advocate will testify on my behalf. You also are to testify because you have been with me from the beginning. I did not say these things to you from the beginning because I was with you, but now I am going to the one who sent me, yet none of you asks me, where are you going? But because I have said these things to you, sorrow has filled your hearts. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the advocate will not come to you. But if I go, I will send the Spirit to you. And when the Spirit comes, the Spirit will prove the world wrong about sin and righteousness and judgment. About sin, because they do not believe in me. About righteousness, because I am going to the Father, and you will see me no longer. About judgment, because the ruler of this world has been condemned. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. When the Spirit of truth comes, the Spirit will guide you into all the truth. For the Spirit will not speak on the Spirit's own, but will speak whatever the Spirit hears, and the Spirit will declare to you the things that are to come. The Spirit will glorify me, because the Spirit will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. For this reason, I said that the Spirit will take what is mine and declare it to you. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, Stephanie and family, for that reading. Okay, well, as we enter into our time of sermon this morning, give me just one moment to close the shared screen. Okay, and I'd like to begin with this. Have you ever heard the phrase love language? It was a phrase that was popularized by author Gary Chapman in the early 1990s in his book, The Five Love Languages. And according to Chapman, a love language is the particular way an individual or group expresses and experiences love. And as the title of his book suggests, Chapman believes there are five core love languages. Acts of service could be a love language, gift giving, physical touch, quality time, and words of affirmation. Now, according to Chapman's research, each one of us has at least one primary love language. Did you know that about yourself? You have a love language, and so does everyone around you. And so the key to any successful relationship with a friend or a spouse, a romantic partner, a coworker, a sibling, a parent, a child, a neighbor, the key is to discover their love language and speak it to them, just as their task is to discover your love language and speak it back to you. Now, the problem, of course, with relationships is that we all tend to presume that our own love language makes the most sense. And so we get confused and frustrated when others fail to see how much sense our love language makes. For example, if I happen to express love through acts of service, let's say, and decide to do the laundry for everyone in my household, I may well become perplexed and even irritated when my family perceives this not as an act of love, but as nothing more than a household duty. Similarly, if my daughter Sophia's love language happens to be, let's say, words of affirmation, and what I give her instead is a neatly folded pile of clean shirts and socks, it's not only confusing for her, but incredibly frustrating. Our reciprocating love cannot flourish if, when she tells me she appreciates me, my response back to her is that I really wish she'd just clean her room. The good news, however, is that the opposite is also true. if the two of us, Sophia and I, are willing to put in the time and effort to learn one another's love language, say, Sophia does the laundry for me and I make a point to tell her how grateful I am to have her as my daughter, well then, my goodness, love abounds. For we have each learned the power of translating love for the sake of love. Now, if love language are familiar to you, you will know that it's been nearly 30 years since Chapman first introduced these ideas. And of course, over time, we've come up with many more love languages to complement his original five. Indeed, we've discovered there are nearly as many love languages as there are individual humans. For example, just the other day, I heard a friend say that practical jokes are a love language. Specifically, they are the love language of one Chris Metcalf, which I'd say sounds about just right. It's one of the ways Chris expresses and experiences love. And once you understand this, once you take time to learn this about Chris, then you can easily see that nothing says to Chris, I love you, quite like Carolyn placing cellophane over the toilet seat on Valentine's Day. I mean, forget the Hallmark card. Chris needs a prank, as his loved ones well know. The point being, there are many ways to say, I love you. And the most effective way tends to be in the language our beloved understands best. So, I begin with all of that for one simple reason. What Chapman is onto here with this idea of love languages is, I believe, precisely the point of our passage from Acts chapter 2 today, the story of Pentecost. It is, I'd like to suggest, the very lesson the Spirit of God is intent on teaching the early church. That same lesson about love languages, a lesson we might call the art of Pentecosting. Now, admittedly, Luke doesn't speak specifically of a love language, true enough. However, he does use a remarkably similar phrase. In fact, he uses it twice just for emphasis. And I wonder, did you happen to catch it when Alan was reading the passage just a moment ago? Luke tells us in verse 6, and then again in verse 8, that as the apostles spoke, each person in that crowd heard them speaking in the native language of each. And that means something far more significant than simply hearing Galileans speak in Latin or Greek or Persian and whatever language the Phrygians and Pamphylians spoke. What Luke means by native language is something akin to what Chapman means by love language. Just as a love language is the particular way an individual or a group expresses and experiences love, a native language is the particular way an individual or group expresses and experiences communion with God. And the art of Pentecosting is the faithful effort to communicate the gospel in our neighbor's native language. That, it seems to me, is the entire point of our passage. Indeed, the point of the entire book of Acts, the art of Pentecosting. Now, if you're familiar with the standard interpretation of Acts chapter 2, my claims about the art of Pentecosting may not sound all that persuasive. For the standard interpretation sees a somewhat different point to our passage. It suggests that the purpose of Pentecost was to show how God finally overcame the curse of Babel. Have you ever heard that interpretation before? Prior to the Tower of Babel, according to Genesis 11, all people spoke a single language. After the Tower of Babel, God confused their speech, and because they could not understand one another, they went their separate ways. But here, at Pentecost, God reverses the curse of Babel. And once again, humans are united in a common tongue. Sounds familiar? So goes the typical interpretation of Acts chapter 2. Now, while that interpretation certainly has some merit, it's never sat quite right with me for this reason. If Babel was all about moving from one language to many, and then, according to the standard interpretation of Acts 2, Pentecost is all about moving from many languages to one, it leaves me wondering, isn't that actually just the opposite of what Luke actually describes? You see, Luke doesn't tell us that the apostles spoke in one language, which everyone readily understood. Rather, the whole point seems to be that they spoke in many tongues as the Spirit gave them ability, so that this crowd from every nation under the sun heard the gospel in their own native languages, such that the crowds were amazed and even bewildered, saying to one another with a tremulous scrupulosity, what could this all mean? In other words, Pentecost wasn't the reverse of Babel. It was the continuation of it. The Spirit doesn't overcome multiple languages. The Spirit actually affirms them as good and true. Now, of course, some have referred to this not as a miracle of speech, but rather as a miracle of hearing. But again, I don't think that quite gets at Luke's point either. It's not simply that the Spirit made them hear differently. Indeed, the point seems to be just the opposite. The Spirit helped them all speak differently. Many languages were spoken. And for that reason, Luke tells us, the apostles were understood by all. In other words, Luke seems to be suggesting that the very first gift of the Spirit, the very first fruit of a Spirit-filled life, is the ability to speak in the native language of one's neighbors. To speak, that is, so that they can actually hear. Have you ever had one of those moments where you were in a class and it seemed to you like the professor and perhaps all of your peers were speaking a foreign language? You know, maybe it was a math class or a chemistry class, perhaps a literature class, or maybe even a Bible class. Have you ever had one of those moments? You know for certain these people are saying something. Words are clearly coming out of their mouths, but while others may understand what's going on, you haven't got a clue. Well, that was precisely what it was like for me at my very first seminar on the very first day of graduate school. I knew Professor Hauerwas must have been making some sort of sense, but I had absolutely no idea what sense that actually might be. He simply was not speaking in a way I could hear. And that, it seems to me, is the very issue Luke is highlighting here in Acts. The expansion of the church comes not by simply proclaiming the gospel, but by speaking it in the native language of each. And why is Luke so intent on highlighting this particular point? Because he knew, as we've experienced time and again, how hesitant we are to translate the gospel into any language other than the one with which we are most familiar. Which is why Christians go on mission trips to Peru or Ghana or Lithuania and try to convert everyone they meet into Southern Baptists from Alabama, and then wonder why it makes no sense to them. As Luke clarifies, the Spirit's point, right from the start, seems to be that there is no one language the gospel must come in. Rather, when the gospel is truly spoken, it is spoken in the native language of the one to whom it is spoken, which comes by miracle that first Pentecost and becomes our mission after that, as if God is saying, here is how it's done. Now, go and do likewise. Which brings me back to Chapman's love languages. The whole point of learning a love language is to translate love for the sake of love, so that it may actually be heard, felt, received by our beloved. Similarly, I'd like to suggest the whole point of learning our neighbor's native language, how they experience and express communion with God, is likewise to translate love for the sake of love, which is exactly what God does in Jesus, and exactly what God does in the Spirit at Pentecost, and exactly what we too are called to do in our own preaching. It is the art of Pentecosting. Why is it so hard for some people to hear the gospel? Well, perhaps because it is continually spoken in someone else's language, like trying to speak American Southern Baptist in Peru. But what if we took it as our task to speak the gospel, not in our own language, but in the one that makes the most sense to our neighbors? Is that not precisely what we see Paul doing time and again throughout the entire book of Acts, what the Spirit is preparing us for right here at Pentecost? In fact, what if our calling is not to tell others to be different, but rather to be different ourselves for the sake of others? What if, in other words, evangelism is as much about our conversion as it is about the conversion of the ones with whom we share the good news? You know, we've talked a good bit this year about welcome. And what if the lesson of Acts 2 is that welcome has never been about erasing differences, pretending they don't exist, or overcoming differences, converting them into us, but rather, what if welcome is all about leaning into differences so that we might learn to speak a new language? For that, it seems to me, is what the art of Pentecosting is all about. So, what does God sound like in your native language? And what does God sound like in your neighbors? When we take the time to figure that out, to speak to one another out of that knowledge, well then, I'd say we are finally speaking the language of love. Amen.